to Saha Says, where we'll go over the headlines of the week, sharing our in-the-weeds opinions. Joining us tonight on the program, we have Pinky, who is the team captain for UTSA's CCDC, or Collegiate Cyber Defense Competition Team, Cooper, who is the biohacker amongst us, our news curator, and myself, I am Sciatic Nerd, who coordinates B-Sides SATX and manages this podcast, or so we say. Of course, we would like to open the program by thanking our sponsor, Axion VPN, who delivers a quality solution for your private connection needs. If you or your organization is interested in sponsoring the efforts of Saha or Saha Says, feel free to reach out to SATX Hackers on Twitter. Now, rolling right on into the news.
At the bottom of the stairwell somewhere.
That's a big Twinkie.
Oh, dear.
No, that's a...
Speaking of big Twinkies, anybody looking forward to the new Ghostbusters?
Actually, I'm not sure, one way or the other.
Yeah, agreed. I'm with you there.
And speaking of other things we want to see, but we just haven't had a chance to talk about yet, season two of Mr. Robot starts when? What is that, Wednesday?
Yeah, I think Wednesday, yeah, but I've already bought it on Google Play, so it'll automatically populate and be able to stream.
Oh, that's awesome. Anybody getting ready to participate in Prime Day tomorrow?
I'm considering it.
So Prime Day is Amazon Prime. It's kind of a special sales day, a Christmas in July kind of Black Friday-ish thing. The weirdness is that last year, I think, was the inaugural year, and some folks said, yeah, there just wasn't that much to buy. Now, granted, lots of things were on sale, but maybe not things you wanted.
Yeah.
So I was curious to see what was out there, you know, if it's just going to be an awesome pack of a good deal on 100 zip ties.
So, like, I remember FreeBSD mentioned that there's a 55-inch 4K TV that's going to be, like, $600 tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That would be nice to have extra money, but, you know, what's DEF CON's only so far away.
Yeah, it's like in 2 weeks or so it feels.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
So, every extra money is not buying a new TV, it's... saving up for, you know, that new experience. Instead of shiny new things, shiny new places to go.
Well, speaking
people
of shiny
people to meet and piss off.
Speaking of shiny new things, is there anything new happening in the world of 3D printing by any chance?
Why, yes. And it's funny that you mentioned that. Because if I can actually get this to open. Yes.
Welcome to Saha Says, where we can't open articles or read them.
Indeed.
Yes, this is where Cooper learns how to compute. Because his mother bought him a computer for Christmas.
That'll be lovely. That's terrific. Yes. Read your story at a reasonable level.
Daily.com. How a new 3D printing technique gave one cancer survivor a whole new jaw. Cancer survivor keeps his lower face hidden under a surgical mask that covers up a missing jaw, the result of his battle with cancer that first began in 1998.
Wow.
But now a new technique developed by researchers at Indiana University will give him a realistic and comfortable prosthetic jaw. Though through digital modeling and 3D printing, researchers are able to prototype and create prosthetics quicker with a method that eliminates the claustrophobic and difficult process patients go through to create a mold of their face, resulting in lighter, more personalized facial prosthetics. Maybe I need a new jaw because I can't speak.
No, but wait. So this is actually really fascinating because we've seen in 3D model making for special effects work for Hollywood that there are very expensive and lengthy processes for making a mold of someone's face, all for the express purpose of making a lifelike impression for the latex mask or some kind of foam rubber, things like that. So here in this article, it's really interesting because they're saying instead of plaster, researchers take photos of their patient from multiple angles, essentially creating a topographic map of their face, which allows them to then use sculpting software, ZBrush, I believe is what it says, to actually print off the prosthetic. The question is, does it mean that, I mean, how long is a prosthetic going to be good for? I'd be very curious to see what it turns out like and how long you can keep one, because maybe you have to go back every month to pick up not just your prescription, but your new jaw. And every couple of months, you got to go buy another one because they wear out or they crack. And this is really going to push filament science for the materials for pliability and just to take this to a really, really next level kind of thinking. And once you get to that, are you going to start 3D printing or producing the prosthetic teeth? Because I would imagine that's got to be a different material. You'd want it to be pliable for the jaw, but not as pliable, I would guess, for teeth. But I mean, that's
or
just
can you like do you know computer modeling and then create it out of porcelain and then you know embed it like false teeth with the screw on the bottom.
Sure,
they sometimes do for permanent. Teeth replacement for dentist oral surgery and put that into the prosthetic jaw. That to me, that sounds like ultimate life changing surgery right there, because you can even, through that modeling and prosthetic print, you can even make a full steel jaw, not just plastic. And, it just makes me wonder if the guy still has, the skin left over, but that's like 15 years of change.
Right.
How much can technology rebuild at that point? There's a video on there that I haven't really, gone through yet. I've just been looking at it a little bit here while we've been talking, and it shows like the modeling process, what have you, with the doctors. And that's just, unbelievably impressive to me, just as a, guy that used to be an art student and specializing in sculpture just freaks me out that is possible now.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you want to chime in here, Pinky, but the idea that we can actually, I'm almost thinking in terms of a snap in or out module, basically, because if you know where the upper jawline is, I would imagine it's not impossible to reverse out the shape of the matching teeth if you had prior impressions to then use to, okay, so now we know where to hook the jaw up to make that fit the mouth. And you're going to, of course, without that lower jaw, because Roger Ebert had this issue. He had, I thought it was mouth cancer, or it was in his jawbone, actually.
Wow.
And so they had to remove the lower jaw. So he was still on television for a while, but he looked very different because they made a prosthetic, but it didn't look quite right. But and so he stayed even after that, because he now had to speak with years of his life, had to speak with a voice box. So he dropped the TV appearances and went instead to just purely writing. And he would just write and write and write. It was great to see how prolific he was, because he just kept reviewing movies. He did what he loved to do all the way to the end. And that was awesome. And now here's someone who's been fighting since 1998. And just, he's alive, he's kicking, but you know what? You had to lose the jaw. It's amazing.
Quality of life.
Right. And so, it depends on what you're living for, I guess. And that's amazing to see that kind of resilience and to see where we can take this. But okay, I know that's way too positive and we need to move on, because that's just too positive and no one wants to be that positive, right? So in something that's a little less...
Can you imagine how painful it would be if it broke in your mouth? You know, your prosthetic, if you've made out two cheap materials. You're just chewing, the jaw breaks, it takes some teeth with it. There you go. Now we're not so positive, and now everyone is wincing.
There you go. Well, actually, I have a friend who's been through irradiation a couple of times to get rid of cancer, and he actually has, they were prosthetic teeth, but he didn't explain that as we were at dinner one night, and he said, oh, just lost a tooth. What?
What?
The tooth had exploded. And it turns out it was a prosthetic tooth, and so he felt nothing. It was shock value, and he enjoyed torturing. It looks like a cat behind your head.
My mother? Uh-oh. She was eating
your
a gummy
a
bear.
Cat behind your head?
Yeah. What? She was eating a what?
A gummy bear, right?
Okay.
And it took one of her teeth that had a root canal.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
Rip the cap off?
Now that no one's listening to us, they've turned it off.
They're not talking about security this week.
Yeah.
for this.
Well, back on security, the U.S. Yep. Appeals Court upholds a conviction over a shared password. This is a story that was we were going to use from a different site, but this is from Reuters.com. And it basically says that a divided federal appeals court on Tuesday gave the U.S. Department of Justice broad leeway to police password theft under a 1984, that's right, 1984 anti-hacking law, upholding the conviction of a former international executive for having stolen confidential client data. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said that the person violated the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act of in 2005. When he and two friends, who had also just left the same firm, used an employee's password to access the recruiting firm's computers and obtain information to help start a new firm. Now, this is an OPSEC issue. This is a how do you manage your data and what kind of plans you have in place. We've joked about binary stories before where basically there are only three or four actual kinds of stories. And this sounds like a configuration management one. And basically, well, that's amazing. Go ahead.
It's just, this is an interesting law because, you know, while it could fit into misconfiguration, just the fact that the law is allowing something like this to happen makes it almost like a third case of, you know, I guess legal issues because we don't tackle them much, especially without Vesh on the talk.
Well, right. So there are certain things that we, that he has more insight into, I'll admit it. But when we look at this, that there's, you know, there's always the stand that, okay, so they're going to hold up those who do bad things in society and use that as the litmus test for why we should be allowed to do whatever we want to do to these people because we see it as holding a higher moral ground, right? So in this case, this isn't about a moral ground. This is, unless theft is suddenly bigger than it has been in the past, this is about how much power you have to go and turn it against someone, right? So, it says that it could, this reasoning could cover the sharing of passwords to devices like smartphones, laptops, iPads, transform millions of people who engage in this ubiquitous, useful, and generally harmless conduct into unwitting federal criminals. So there is the touchstone moment. This is the actual point where we would jump off and say, hold on now. So you're going to use this to shoehorn and get broader powers than you're supposed to have because you want to call out someone else on this action when in reality, it's just okay, fine. Everybody go out and get yourself password managers right now. And you can argue for or against them, but you can avoid a lot more easily. You can avoid duplicating passwords on devices if you use something that helps you do it. So let's make some new bad habits.
Decisions?
Yeah. So quick question on your guys' thoughts. So this is ruling that, you know, if you share your password with your wife or husband, whatever, that you could hypothetically be prosecuted under this law. You know, sharing your Netflix password, whatever, Facebook. So would that still apply to password managers, you think? Here, take my, you know, one password key and go use it.
One password for Teams?
Do you think the law
Teams?
Is worded in that way? Because it's not technically sharing your password. You're sharing the device. So it would be like sharing a USB, maybe?
Well, maybe, but you have to see how it's written, and we can actually then delve into the loopholes that are embedded in most policies, because the ones who write them are also the ones who write the loopholes to misuse or abuse them. At least that's what I've heard. I don't know about you. So, Pinky, have you ever actually, so, you know, you and FreeBSD, you guys, you share details and stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
So that under the law, that's protected because that's husband and wife. So that's actually a different protection. When it comes to if Coop and I wanted to share a device and I want to pass, hey, here, check out this device I've got and go ahead and here's my password to my video streaming service. So go ahead and use it to your heart's content. Now, you can argue one way or the other that it's very difficult to prosecute, just like back in the 90s with music sharing, although they did eventually track down hundreds of thousands of people. So it does make you wonder, what exactly, where is the line? And who is going to be culpable?
Yeah. So it sounds like no more FTP servers amongst friends or sharing that Plex server with friends as well, right?
Well, with the Plex server, you don't have to share the credentials.
But still, you know, by allowing other people outside of your family to have accounts on it, to be able to stream from it, then you become a distributor.
Well, hasn't that always been a gray area?
Indeed.
No, not according to the lawmakers. They actually claim that you don't ever own any of this material. Actually, not the lawmakers, mm-hmm. but the content owners. Excuse me, yeah. The content owners.
RIAA or whatever.
Right, well, that's the actual act, right? But the deal is that the those who produce say, that's mine. I made it. You bought a copy. We're allowing uh-huh. you access to this material. So you don't ever actually own anything. Nothing. Everything in that CD library technically is on loan. Or not loan, more like, you're allowed to look at it, listen to it, and that way we won't bust down the front door and take you away for making an audio cassette. Which, by the way, if you go back far enough and look at the legislation and the laws from the 80s, you're going to actually find, late 70s, articles, graphics, whole campaigns saying that if you copy if you were able to make a duplication of your album, that you were going to end the music industry. You were going to ruin the media as we know it, because people at home will copy and no one will buy anything ever again. This is the same story over and over for the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in fact, most often it would enhance sales, because then you would be exposing other people to things they would never otherwise hear on their own.
Yeah, that's the point of argument, and actually in that same kind of idea is, you know, once you've heard something, there's nothing new under the sun, right? 40 years of the same arguments. Just real quick to mention, a corrupt agent who investigated the Silk Road black market is now suspected of another $700,000 heist. And I just wanted to mention real quick this Ars Technica story of how newly unsealed court documents have revealed that one of the corrupt federal agents investigating Silk Road, the online drug marketplace, is suspected of stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoin after this person pled guilty last year. So now, let me ask you. So you help bring down a giant ring of badness, right? That's your claim to fame. But on your way out the door, you grabbed the picture here that they associate is a person walking in a poorly lit parking garage in a security camera, CCTV, closed circuit TV image, carrying a duffel bag, as though the Bitcoins were stuffed in there, as if you could reach out and grab a handful of Bitcoin and walk off with it. What's the current going rate of a Bitcoin? Anybody got a line on that? While we think about, you know, okay, what do you do with all that untraceable Bitcoin cash? Oh, wait, it's a cryptocurrency. Why couldn't you trace it?
One Bitcoin is about $650 right now, US dollars.
Wow.
Just for one.
Just for one Bitcoin.
Makes you wish you bought more when it was one for one, right?
No kidding.
Yeah. But everybody says that, right? Oh, I wish I'd gotten in on that gold rush when they were out there doing that. You know, my daddy had fill in the blank relative. And the truth is, none of us are making money on Dogecoin, I don't think.
Unfortunately.
Nah.
Not even Doge.
Not even Doge. And much wow. Very story. Okay, so I was hoping that we could actually move on with the rundown. Pinky, you got us?
Yes, I got us. So, speaking of, you know, figuring out how to transfer those secret Bitcoins, you can now do this through Facebook Messenger soon.
Uh-oh.
Because according to PC World, Facebook brings end-to-end encryption to Messenger with secret conversations.
Secret conversations.
So this is tying into our, you know, podcast a few weeks ago when we talked about WhatsApp, Google's Allo, and Signal. Those are all different applications that you can currently get for your phone where you can have, you know, end-to-end encryption, ideally, to go talk about and, you know, not have it stored on your phone, not stored for the logs for your, you know, carrier to later reports when you do something illegal. I don't know, whatever. But now Facebook is trying to catch on to this market because it's getting popular. So they're calling it Secret Conversations, and it's only to a limited number of users for now, but later this summer, they're trying to make it more widespread, and it's just going to be a temporary conversation, end-to-end encryption, and then I guess eventually it's just going to go away, there won't be evidence, and you can't do group messaging, so it's one-to-one only.
Secret Conversations. I'll only do that 400 or 500 more times.
Logged on Facebook servers, right?
Well, right. It's not going to still be there. Just like when they discovered that Snapchat messages that people sent were not there at all. Yes. And then they've stumbled into them and found, bunches of them still were there.
Hacker stole them and then put them online.
So apparently Facebook is planning to use it, the same encryption that Signal is using, which is also what's used by WhatsApp and Allo. So I guess this comes down to, like we covered before, is if they're going to properly implement it, because I think WhatsApp had problems with that for a little bit.
So the last story behind the story block there at the very end says they're not sure. Facebook hasn't said whether it plans to move towards a fully encrypted messenger, or only offer the option to people who need it. Suddenly, I think they're just going to try to monetize that, don't you? I mean,
yeah, totally. You know, every time you want to have one, pay a dollar or some shit. Before you know, they'll be rich.
Right. And maybe they do it even, let's say they finally found a way to make microtransactions work. Hey, you want to have 5 minutes of encryption? That's 5 cents or 10 cents or some other fractional value. And
all in Bitcoin.
Yeah, Dogecoin. Actually, it'll be Facecoin or something useful like that, you know?
Well, you can't transfer money, you know, in Facebook now.
Palm credits, what?
Palm credit? No.
Face palm credits.
Baseball credits, I like it.
I actually think that's pretty awesome. That's terrific.
I don't. That just seems like a terrible idea, regardless.
Terrible ideas?
Facebook, what have you.
The double decker meat sandwiches that we saw in the 90s, were bad ideas, where it was like meat for the buns on the outside and then meat in the middle, and then cheese to hold everything together like glue of some kind.
But they tasted so good.
I'm not so sure. My cholesterol doesn't think it was a great idea. In fact, I couldn't even bring myself to eat that. Which, you know, remarkably, like this should have ended already, that ends out our news headlines for this week, and we can move into things like the hack of the week. And I wanted to roll us right into it with a story that shouldn't surprise anyone at this point, and there are two actually smaller stories that kind of go together. And the story in this case comes to us from both the Register, .co.uk, and also a story from neowin.net, where they basically talk about Intel code leaves systems vulnerable to attacks, and it's a flaw used to bypass all Windows security. This is from the 5th of July, and basically, a security researcher has uncovered a flaw in Lenovo machines in particular, which affects the BIOS, leaving systems vulnerable to attack. Lenovo's Product Security Incident Response Team, PSIRT, I don't know if it's really pronounced that way. I just had fun saying PSIRT, is now aware of the UEFI vulnerability, which it says was reported as part of an uncoordinated disclosure. So the other article basically shows that one day earlier, Lenovo's scrambling to get a fix for the BIOS vulnerability. Is it a bug or a backdoor? Lenovo and possibly other vendors. So now, see, the Register article says it could be broader, actually, than just Lenovo. For some reason, it seems like the author here on Neowin, I don't know if they have it in for Lenovo or if that's just where it was discovered. So that's what they were reporting. So I'll start with the obvious suggestion here that it's all Lenovo's. Dun, dun, dun. So who here amongst
newer
us?
Newer ones.
Specifically newer ones? Okay.
Probably newer ones because it's often enough this is not the first time we've seen problems with the firmware issue. It's like UEFI or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the boot sequence in the BIOS. That has been an issue ongoing for a while now.
And you're right, the article does mention UEFI.
I'm very thankful. I've got one of the last ThinkPads before that was in the BIOS.
And that's what I was going to ask.
And I'm not upgrading the BIOS.
Ah, there we go.
I will go to Open Boot before that.
And how stable is Open Boot these days?
Well, you know, think of how stable is most open source projects.
Sweet.
So it's going to crash every 5 minutes.
Uh-huh. It's a coffee table with styrofoam legs. Sweet. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. So I'm curious, Pinky, if you have any hardware that is Lenovo based.
No, I am a firm Apple user. What can I say?
Ah. Well, it's still Intel-based, so technically it could be using the same BIOS.
Yes, and I do have UEFI, so I agree, it could.
Don't be like that, Coop. We all have BIOS issues. We all have UEFI somewhere. Just wait for the day that they actually...
Lurking in the corner.
Terrific. That's awesome. Now, it's actually an interesting idea if you start to think about it, if there really was a hole that large in UEFI as a platform.
Hey, so the article, the mm-hmm. Neowin ones?
Yep.
It's also used the problems in gigabit motherboards, HP systems, and more.
See, so
and more!
But the point...
What's it more?
Except the part was they started with poke, 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 Lenovo. Poke, 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 Lenovo.
Yes, and they have this as almost at the end of the article.
Yep. And so... And see, there, just exactly. Look, there, just like Pinky said, what's worse is that this was quickly confirmed to not be limited to Lenovo ThinkPads. Yep. Man, I have a gigabyte motherboard. I'm going to have to go back and hit it with a hammer. What's PC load letter? Let's find out. and so I guess I'm going to need to build another machine.
Is this one we get to see the scene out of Mr. Robot where you pry up chips, throw it in the microwave, and hear it sizzling and sparking in the background?
Maybe in one I get from a pawn shop. Sure, I'll go ahead and set that outside and watch my neighbors get upset. That could happen. That or, you know, it's I'll see if I can build a drone rig large enough to carry it in have it floating up above the ground. That way that we can create some kind of special effects, try to film it, you know. None of that. But so anyway,
Let's go on to the next one.
Please do.
From one of our favorite sources, because it's an easy target. The hackernews.com reports here about oops, TP-Link forgets to renew and loses its domains used to configure router settings. So they lost their URL, tplinklogin.net, and you know, to make configurations of routers easier, hardware vendor instruct users to browse to domain name rather than numeric IP addresses. Networking equipment vendor TP-Link uses either tplinklogin.net or tplinkextruder.net for its router's configuration, although users can also access their router administration panel through local IP address 192.168.1.1. The first domain offered by the company is used to configure TP-Link routers, and the second is used for TP-Link Wi-Fi extenders. So here's the blunder. TP-Link has reportedly forgotten to renew both domains that are used to configure its routers and access administrative panels of its devices. Both domains have now been re-registered using an anonymous registration service by an unknown entity and being offered for sale online at the small price of $2.5 million each.
Million.
Well, let me just go into, you know, my savings account. Go buy it. Damn.
Yeah, right. And just get a couple of them at that price. Yeah, let's
break that. Do you think Amazon will do a deal tomorrow during, you know, Prime Day?
Oh, gee.
So wait. So to explain, Pinky, can you explain this for us? I mean, what this actually what they've done to themselves.
Well, especially since the fact that they're not even interested in buying back the domains. They're trying to update their manuals to remove the domain name references altogether, apparently. But still, it's on the bottom of your routers. Those who are less technical and aren't aware of this are just going to go to that link, and it's going to probably end up eventually looking just like a TP-Link. It's going to ask for your username and password. You're going to put it in. It's going to look all right, and they're actually going to get into your network somehow through nice little button. You know, download this in order to configure your router. And then they steal all your data, porn, whatever.
Your data porn. And
dick pics. Yep.
Are we talking ransomware injection?
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. That'd be the way to go.
And just to make it perfectly clear, so most home routers have a, for convenience sake, have a standardized login that you can use from a web browser to go and administer to make some configuration changes. So, unfortunately, TP-Link forgot to pay up before the expiration date hit. Someone dropped the ball, unfortunately, and it looks like now that's up for grabs at some cool $2.5 million, I think was the written note in the rundown. And so that means that, yes, it's going to be much safer, folks, if you know what the 192.168.1.1, the standard IPv4 address is, to use that to access these devices or use that little reset button or pinhole reset option to blow it back to the beginning to access it at that default address. It's always a good idea to double check in the manual or documentation for those home routers to make sure if it's listed what the IP address is rather than that hard-coded router login.net feature, which is no longer going to be viable specifically for TP-Link products. I know I have two or three of their inexpensive routers. What's up, Pinky?
So, just so you know, guys, your username is admin and your password is also admin, according to this picture.
Please change it.
Yeah, please change it.
Change it.
For configuration.
And also, can you Can you imagine, like, you call Time Warner or whatever because you're having internet problems. Mm. If they ever told you to actually log in and you have, you know, they don't update it on their end and their tech support side. So Time Warner helps you. Oh, and boy. I'm just picking at Time Warner because they're one of the big ones, you know.
Yeah.
They help you get ransomware on your own machine. Wouldn't that be an interesting case if that happens?
Oh, gosh, that would be terrible.
It'd be terrible, but just could you then sue TP-Link or Time Warner? You know, because you're getting, you paid someone for support, and if they don't help you fix it.
I don't think so. I don't think there's a liability there because of the terms of service. We actually would have to go look at the terms of service. And normally, they stop at the, I believe, at the outside line, outside the house, or just inside the house. I don't believe they support. Coop, what's up?
Oh, no, I actually had something else to add here because I totally posted this story, you know, a bit ago on my Facebook feed and got an interesting quote from Johnny Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
He was saying about this, saying, like, we were mocking it, saying, oops, this is so funny. But he's like, except when connected to the router, DHCP assigns the client a name server address, which is the same as the router's IP. Because the router also hosts DNS services, the internal DNS is hard-coded to return the router's current IP for TP-Link login.net, and since this would work every time, internet-based DNS servers are never contacted. So the ownership of this domain is pretty moot. The only people this would affect are those who are not connected to this router, yet for some reason set out to connect to this domain anyway.
Okay.
Amazing quote from him. A really nice guy, too. Yeah. And it just made me laugh even harder, thinking, who will, you know, when you set up your router, why would you even connect it to the internet to start with until it's secure? You've changed your admin password to log in and, you know, everything. Just set it all up before you put it public. You know,
Cooper, isn't that... you're actually asking people to secure their shit?
Yes, I'm begging people to set it up, secure it, and then connect it.
Now,
I know that's asking a lot, but please, God, for all that is holy, do this.
But Spock, don't you know by now that people are following the Ron Popeil method of protection? They set it and forget it. And that's just how it is.
It is.
It's why we get paid the little bucks.
It's why we get paid.
Job security.
Dog. Hey, Pinky. What's going on with the Mac?
Some more job security. So there's a new backdoor program that steals keychain contents.
Oh, no.
And this is thanks to networkworld.com. So, you know, it's getting more in the news lately that Mac's actually getting some malware and whatnot, you know. Wouldn't hurt to actually get an antivirus on your Mac. You know, you're no longer safe.
Yeah.
But researchers have identified a new Mac backdoor program that's designed to steal credentials stored in your OS encrypted keychains and give attackers control over the system. And it's dubbed OSX/KeyDNAP.
Kidnap.
You know, short for kidnapped.
Gosh. Look at
that. By researchers from the antivirus vendor ESET. This is the second backdoor program targeting Macs found by antivirus firms in the past few days. Mm-mm. And it's not clear how, you know, KeyDNAP is distributed, but it arrives on computers in the form of a zip archive. Inside there's an executable file, apparently with a benign extension such as text or JPEG, that actually has a space character at the end. And the file also has an icon indicating an image or text file. And if you actually open this malicious file in Finder, it actually executes its code in the terminal application. Oh. The execution happens really fast, with the terminal window just flashing by for a bit. So you're always going to be like, what was that? I don't think that was right. But, you know, you're going to probably not give it a second guess for most people. But the good news is that the file is downloaded from the internet, and the gatekeeper security feature is turned on for the latest versions of OS X. The file won't be executed automatically, and the user will see a security warning. Ah. However, yeah, the gatekeeper is sometimes annoying, but has its use, so don't turn it off, people.
Nice.
If it's executed, it'll download and install the backdoor component called iCloud Sync D, which connects to its command and control channel over the Tor Anonymity network. So then if it has root access, this component also configures itself to start every time the Mac is rebooted.
Mm-hmm. No escape.
Lovely.
So, Mac users, listen to Pinky. You're no longer safe. Get antivirus of some kind. And for the love of Pete.
Go ahead. Or just don't click shit.
Oh. Yeah, don't click shit. Sophos is pretty good for Mac. It takes a long gas time for the initial one, but after that, it's pretty good. And then use Gatekeeper. It might be annoying every time you download an executable mm-hmm. from the internet that you have to right-click and say, yes, I actually mean to open this. But it saves you from this shit when it's like, why is this JPEG trying to execute something? Hmm. Oh, think gosh. For a moment. Your pictures or text files shouldn't be executing stuff.
Now, something else that shouldn't be executed is Wendy's. And I mean that because when you ask where is the beef, the answer is going to be it's a credit card hack. That's where the beef was. And the beef was your cash. And sadly, just very briefly, this company, the Columbus, Ohio-based company, updated a statement on its website to confirm that 1,025 locations are now thought to have been affected by malware installed on their point-of-sale systems. Originally, they thought fewer than 300 of the 5,144 franchise locations were initially affected when the malware was discovered in May. Unfortunately, this malware was able to obtain cardholder information, like the number, the expiration date, verification, value or CVV code, service code, and other additional information. And they're still not sure quite how far widespread this is, but they said that the list of restaurants would be posted online soon. So the danger here, real quick, is if you recently ate at Wendy's, you might be getting a call from your card companies to talk about getting a replacement set up. If not, it's worth double-checking your statements to see if anything else has happened, and always check with your bank or whomever your card supplier is to make sure that nothing fraudulent is going on, if you have an
also,
option.
Also, recent is as in February of this year.
Well, that's when... Well, okay, good point. I read too quickly.
You know, it's already July. I got the email from Wendy's, actually, as well. They sent an email out to a lot of people, if you're subscribed to their newsletter. And they warned you that, you know, they've caught it. It's worse than they suspected, you know. So just be on guard and keep an eye out. Doesn't hurt to have a credit monitoring service. If you've been hacked by the OPM or, you know, you were affected by it, don't worry. As long as you signed up for it, they'll catch it for you.
Nice. And if you were part of the OPM hack, as so many, many, many people were, definitely sign up for the free credit monitoring that was reported about. So, now we have an opportunity to visit the corner of our own favored prawn. It's the gadget prawn. And this starts off with our friend Coop.
Oh, yes. So I guess we were going to skip the China article, or should we talk about that?
We could talk about that, actually. We
yes, because it looks like China orders Apple to monitor store users and track their identities. Hmm. Thank you, Big Red Brother. According to thehackernews.com, China has long been known for its strict censorship, which makes it difficult for foreign technology companies to do business in the world's most populous country of over 1.35 billion people. Now, the new law issued by the Chinese government will expand its strict internet monitoring efforts into mobile apps, targeting operators including Apple. However, Google currently doesn't operate its app store in China. Oh. The Cyberspace Administration of China, the CAC, has imposed a new regulation on distributors of mobile apps that requires both app stores and app developers keep a close eye on users and maintain a record of their activities for at least 60 days. The Chinese internet regulator has introduced the new legislation with the intent to fight issues like terrorism, pornography, violence, money fraud, and distribution of malicious contents.
Yeah, but isn't this the same exact argument that it's a shorthand version of what we've been hearing in the other whenever we have these large political debates or you know, just an argument between legislatures that want to argue the point that bad people are doing bad things with this information, so we need to stand up, take a stand, and instead of going through all that, here it is boiled down to a simple paragraph saying, by the way, we're doing this because. End of story. Uh-huh. We're doing this to monitor you for your safety. And really, what kind of safety is there if you don't feel free enough to do anything? It's kind of a funny thing. If people are given a bring your own device kind of mentality, okay, so you bring your device to work. Okay, but now we're going to lock it down, your device, because mm-hmm. you brought it to work. So we're going to lock it down and take away all the fun things you like to do on your device. So now you're not using the device anymore because you don't have access to the things you wanted in the first place. So mm-hmm. if it's locked down that far and that hard, and this is another form of locking it down, it's just that we're locking it down in the form of knowing everything you touch on this device is visible to someone else for their use, and you don't know what, for 60 days in every single app. That's what this says. Pinky, would you use an app that you knew was watching you, I mean, and taking all of your data down for someone else to review for the next 60 days?
I probably wouldn't, but depending on what you're going to do and if you're aware of it. I mean, if you're going to China, you know what you're getting yourself into, and you're probably not going to do your same activities, hopefully, there, if you care at all. Or maybe you're just going to do like what Cooper suggested, just play Pokemon Go, and they're going to track everywhere you're at, you know, as you catch them all and you're too busy being distracted.
Oh, no, now you brought up the elephant in the room.
And sniff on the Google Drive and all that.
Oh, gosh. So,
you know, so I actually looked into that earlier today.
Into what?
So
your Google Drive?
Well, the Google Drive, I hope we're using. So there's an interesting, sorry for the tangent, mm-hmm. thing going on with... If you use your Google account on an iPhone for Pokemon Go, there's articles now going around that say that, you know, or whatever the company is, Niantic or whatever?
Yeah, I think it's Niantic, which is...
Niantic? Yeah, Niantic. Yeah. They have access to your full Google account.
No.
I believe so.
No, Niantic is a Google company. It's a spin-off game company.
It used to be. It's no longer.
It used to be a Chinese company?
No, it used to be
a... No, it used to be a Google company.
Coop.
Come on, Coop.
So, stay with us. So it was the company that started Ingress, which is the other augmented reality, get you up off your butt and go walking game. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pinky.
Yeah, so it doesn't affect Android users because it asks what permissions you want to give it, but for the iPhone, it just automatically grants them, according to the news articles, full access to your Google account. However, when we checked into it, FreeBSD and I, it doesn't actually have, it's just the app has some control over your Google account, but the company itself does not. So it's not like, oh, just because I used my Google account, now they can go in and send email and look at my Google Drive. It's not like that.
Okay.
Now, if someone hacked the app, you know, then you might be in some trouble, but it's already released. Make sure you get the, you know, official one. Simple as that.
I see. So now I have the question. All right, Coop, now bring it back in, buddy. You going to tell us which Chinese company you think is behind Niantic now? What? How tight is your tinfoil hat tonight?
Yeah, I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat. I haven't ordered that beanie from Amazon I shared on our Slack channel earlier.
It's a scarf.
There's actually a beanie and gloves as well as a scarf that you can get that's RFID NFC blocking.
So. Yeah.
It makes me want to test the security on that, if it actually does anything, or if it's just products for tinfoil hatters.
And if you wear this while you play Pokemon Go, you're going to bake.
Yeah, I don't like Pokemon, but we're not going to get into that. Instead, I'm going to say that I like my computer, but not as much as this guy from Utah. According to Fox13Now.com, Fox News affiliate, I'm guessing, out in Utah County, Chris Shriver wants to marry his computer.
What?
As quoted, this is not a game, okay? This is not some kind of funny scenario, Shriver said. Shriver made his intentions known and went to Utah County Clerk Brian Thompson to ask for a marriage license. In this day and age, nothing surprises me anymore, Thompson said. This is a county clerk. I've been in this office long enough. I've seen lots of different things, but I just said no. Legally, I cannot do this.
Oh, my.
So, Sherbert named Thompson, Utah Governor Gary Herbert, and Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes in the case filed in district court last week. He says, since it's legal for same-sex couples to marry, all other forms of marriage should be legal, too. Silver says legalizing same-sex marriage is like turning religious beliefs into law because he says there's no scientific proof that homosexuality is a genetic trait. And he is also quoted as saying there is no real proof that there is a gay gene. He said there is no real proof of people being born gay. So during a Skype interview, Fox 13 News, Dora Schrannel asked Shriver if he's sexually attracted to his computer.
So maybe it's an Alienware or something? I don't know. I'm not entirely certain. Maybe it's a Lenovo. I'm not sure which design he goes for.
To go further deeper into the rabbit hole, he's quoted as saying, whatever a person has sex with, they can bond with, he said.
Wait.
I'm going to leave it alone right there.
Yeah.
And open it up to the crowd before I read further insanity on my own opinion and say, if you had the opportunity, is there
would
a
you
computer
stick it in the CD drive?
Like? Is there? No, I was not going to say that.
That's
I don't believe in artificial interfaces, but I do ask, if given the opportunity, is there a device that has that special part of your heart, and you must make a lifetime commitment to it?
Well, be honest here. Your computer's not going to last a lifetime. So your lifetime's probably going to be 3 years with the computer, maybe, you know. So you're only asking 3 years.
Oh, my gosh.
So are you going to, like, get a marriage license for 3 to 5 years for that laptop that you love so much? Or is it only 24 months for that iPhone?
Well, you can
that
work.
You have in your pocket.
You can work towards something more permanent because they do make light scribe drives. You know, if you're willing to stick something into the CD burning drive, but I don't recommend it since apparently something would have to be discombobulated and then spinning at a high rate of speed. So I don't know what your hub ring expander's doing. Wherever
you're
doing
expand
it.
Expand this to maybe marry a distro if you're a Linux guy, like FreeBSD. Are you gonna be polygamous with your FreeBSD?
No, the brand name is Pluggable.
We're gonna have to share it between FreeBSD, you know, BSD, and you know, we're gonna have to share with Arch and have the occasional affair with Gentoo.
So y'all truly
It'll
are
be
poly.
Hooker.
Oh
be,
no. Dear, what? This is okay. Can we reboot this conversation? I'm not
turn
sure
your
that.
Turn it back on again. Oh God, we're all gonna die.
Oh my!
I'm gonna put it over here. This fire that's over here burning in the corner.
So we'll move from that suggestive story
to a different suggestive story. So
great!
Hope you guys are enjoying being in the gutter because we're gonna stay there.
Terrific.
When it's in the sewer now.
Yeah, we're going down to the sewer. So the Daily Mail.co.uk has reported premature evacuation.
Oh, come on.
Sex festival is forced to shut down early because too many people arrived to try out the virtual reality porn. Yes? You heard correctly.
The article, not comment.
Wait a minute now. If you could see the screenshots here, that's not kosher. That's the caption.
I was not blessed this union.
Well, all I'm saying is that when the caption for the photo begins out of hand, we're just going to stop there.
Bad pun.
Big surprise, this was in Japan.
Oh, okay. Big surprise. Okay.
Totally. No. And the staff were left in tears and vowed to hold next event in a bigger venue.
Oh, really?
An airflow cardboard box that simulates fondling a breast. I don't know how you can convince them that.
Wait.
I don't think they know what a breast is.
Well, no, so look.
Other than a picture.
Well, they've got goggles on, so I'm sure something must be simulated there. But Yeah. So go ahead, Pinky. Go ahead and just finish what you started there.
Well, apparently, these people are putting their lives on the line for adult VR, is a quote from the article. I'm not quite sure how.
I don't just keep reading if you want, but look, so it says, honestly, they're wonderful people hoping for a brave new world, and they'll finally have one soon enough. I'm concerned. So let's think about this for a minute. Their people have to buy very expensive rigs to use things like Oculus Rift and the new VR gear. How strong a machine are you going to have to keep up with simulating people, would you think?
I don't know.
I love how the fact that I try to turn this serious for half a second, everyone's like, no, I don't know how to answer this.
I was also baffled about the sanitation issue here, let's be honest.
Everything's dishwasher safe if it's on the top rack.
And so is this rolling back to the previous statement of Alienware?
Use your laptop with
64 gig of RAM, what?
You use your Logic Probe the way you want to. And I'm going to move on to the next story that talks about the actual new artificial pancreas for diabetics nearing FDA approval. So this is still in the gadget section, and I think this is one awesome gadget. The story is from interestingengineering.com, and it says that diabetes plagues millions of people around the world, but treatment techniques have improved in the last decades, so the prognosis is not as grim as it once was. In all of its forms, diabetes has become a treatable disease. This is much to the thanks of the discovery of insulin and its effects on regulating blood glucose levels. Medtronic, a medical technology company, has created an artificial pancreas to automate insulin injections and is nearing FDA approval. So the story is technically not that new because they've been working on this for a long time. But the actual item, called the MiniMed, monitors the user's blood glucose levels on a small device that fits around the waistband. This device can then sense a rise in sugar levels, triggering automatic delivery of insulin to regulate the patient's system. Now, this is an awesome idea, but this goes right back to the group called I Am the Cavalry, who wants very much to make sure that there are security protections in place, and work with, hand in hand with industry to try to make sure that people can't misuse or abuse any external connections for devices like this. So while it's a life-saving device, what do you think? I mean, is this something that we're ready for? Even if it passes FDA approval, are we actually ready to protect ourselves from external sources? Because we're all going to want this to be convenient. Coop, do you know anyone who's currently suffering with diabetes in a way that would definitely benefit from a device like this?
Yeah, definitely. I know a few that already have, like, the automated slow continuous. I don't remember the word offhand.
Is it one of the pumps, maybe? Or
yeah, insulin pump. Okay, there you go. And this would be good, but also it makes me kind of wish they would talk to and partner with Grindhouse Wetware. They've been working on a device, the second version of an implantable that monitors blood pressure, glucose, temperature, beats per minute, what have you, and aggregates that to, say, a smartphone or a tablet, and then it can be processed and archived later. Wow. They already had a other version of it before that mostly just took care of temperature, what have you, and he had it implanted in his forearm, the main guy for Grindhouse Wetware, and he did a trial of it for like 90 days. So it makes me wish that kind of thought process and technology would work with this company. And say, do you remember the guy that got in the news for, and also a job at Rapid7 for hacking his insulin pump?
Yeah, that's Jason. Goodness. I
don't remember his name.
So that was actually his claim to fame. And he's also involved, Jason Ratcliffe. No, not Ratcliffe. It's killing me. I can't think of the gentleman's name. I'll look it up in a minute. The point being that...
This is a kind of interaction we need to further that type of device.
Yes, and with the current practices we have in place, it's going to take a long time. Pinky, have you ever actually thought about how this kind of technology would impact someone you know? Do you have anyone on the team?
Not anyone on the team, but my brother-in-law has diabetes. So, you know, it'd make his life a lot easier. And, of course, then my niece and nephew are at risk for it, just, you know, due to genetics. But I honestly don't know if we're ready for this yet. If we just look at having Wi-Fi in our goddamn cars, and they're getting hacked pretty regularly at this point. So are we ready to start risking a life when we haven't even got to the industry standard yet, you know, to get used to having security in
non-standard places, right?
Devices.
Yeah.
Well, so take that to the next obvious level is this is a massive privacy risk. It's not just the status of your health and vitals. It's the protection of that information so that someone else doesn't get that. Well, what could they do with that? Well, there are any number of things when you start correlating information and data, and you can start doing things that people don't approve of. And at that very moment, you've taken this from a personal privacy and a health issue. And it really just takes it all the way, I think, to another level, which means we need better embedded technology. We need better encryption. We need better protections. We need more transparent use of technologies that provide easy access to these things in our own personal DRM realm. Although people don't like the term DRM, digital rights management, we really do use it. It's been around forever and a day. It's been what, you know, allows or denies us access to things, but it's digital keys and certificates, people. This is the technology we need to be able to use. And if you look at it from another perspective, we're in an era where we are at great risk for our standard technologies in these areas for the last 20 years not being strong enough. But, okay, so what's the difference between the lock that keeps you safe or feeling safe versus a lock that actually keeps you safe? Is it a luggage lock? Is it a standard door lock but a bump key that would actually open it if you tried in 5 seconds? Does it feel secure enough? Is it the feeling of security or actually having something that is strong enough? And that's the question, because would we really pay for it if it was? Coop, I'm curious. You hosted, played host for the key signing party at B-Sides this year in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of public interest in this stuff right now. So what would it take? What do you think that introducing an artificial pancreas that needs data protection, would that give people an excuse to use their strong keys in exchange?
Probably not, until it really slaps them in the face like a trout. You know, they're not going to see it. You know, and, you know, then you also have to get into how good is the encryption that we have today. Because creator of Feather Duster, Metasploit-like tool to break encryption, has said encryption is broken already. It's not good. So, in other words, if the guys that are truly there making the tools to educate us, to show us how bad things are, maybe we need to do a little bit more work and make a better encryption standard. But don't we always have to?
Yes.
And we also need it to be easier to use, because let's be honest, you know, maybe the people listening to our podcast is the right audience for those to be able to learn how to use the keys, you know, generate your own, start using Git for your email using OpenPGP or whatever. But let's think about the normal person. Think about the person you always have to help with tech support. Do you really want to help them with keys? No, you don't, because they're going to just go release their private keys.
Somebody needs to make a signal like for email then.
We do, and we also need maybe something like, you know, like 1Password or something where you just have a USB device. Maybe that would be enough where you just plug it in, you set up, you go through a tutorial that's foolproof, and then every time you need access to something, you just plug that in. There's probably something similar out there, but we need it for all applications, not just your computer.
And it needs to start happening with things, I think, like keybase.io, where you have a public key server to host your things for interchange. But then there should be a more transparent, when I say transparent, I'm really trying to say easier to use, to be honest, not transparent. That's not the right phrase. But the ease of use level has to be closer to that of an app on an iOS device or a commercial mobile device. Forget the platform. The point is that it has to be feel easy enough for someone to be able to use it and actually say, oh, my, you know, we like to say, oh, okay, our grandparents could operate that. It has to be something where someone who is not very tech savvy could understand the concept of, I've just created a key, I've just stored a key, try not to leave it laying out where someone could find it. But that's a hard challenge, because even if you work it out, kind of like the idea with the FDA, you've got to go through a big process, so there's lots of money and there's lots of juggernaut strength behind it. But when you're trying to make something that affects lots of people, but you want a lot of help making it happen, sometimes it's really difficult to get adoption going. It's one thing when you've got a giant pile of money behind you and you can push ads in all the more interesting places that eyeballs will be. So how do you get someone to adopt it if it isn't Pokemon Go right now? I mean, let's face it. Pokemon Go came out, what, 2 days ago? 3 days ago?
Yeah, two.
And if you're under a certain age or over a certain age, it's you've likely been caught in the street or trying to break in somewhere, actually B&E style, because you're chasing Mewtwo or whatever the character's name is, and you're trying to throw Pokeballs at it, and you're at risk of either getting beaten up by somebody, hit by a car, or arrested for trying to get your way in somewhere because you're chasing the game. That's amazing. And also, by the way, if we could harness this and get people to actually do real things instead of attack strange creatures that are not really there, that would be kind of awesome.
No, we are doing something. We are. We're making them exercise. I have seen so many posts about, oh my god, my legs hurt. Oh my god, I have a blister. Oh dear god, I have a sunburn. We're making people rediscover what the outdoors is, and we just solved obesity for, you know, certain age range.
Well, maybe so, but I thought you were actually just, when you said all those things about I have a blister, I thought you were reading that story about the virtual conference in Japan. So maybe not. Maybe.
That's when the wheels fall back off.
Well, yeah, you know, because I was actually going to help us focus for at least 5 whole minutes, but then squirrel. No, wait.
Shiny.
It's a virtual squirrel. Maybe it's a Pokemon.
Speaking of focusing.
Yeah, okay.
Looks like a Redditor bought an antique Mac on Craigslist and found some bad stuff. Doesn't that relate to previous talks of taking care of your old hard drives and stuff like that? Not leaving personal information out there for people to, like an archaeological dig of old tech, find and then exploit?
Well, but doesn't that actually go back to the same question we had before? As I was excited last week, over 20% of people actually taking steps. This is back from the 80s. Do you think people had a thought of or a care about policing their data and keeping an eye on things? Instead, there's a little folder maybe that was on this computer, it says in the article, and that a little 20 megabyte. Think about that for a minute. When was the last time you bought a thumb drive, flash drive, or memory card that was 20 meg? And instead it's, well, let's just say that they discovered some 1986 graphic content on this old Mac SE. And what's worse, the fact that they found this machine and it still worked, or that someone took the time to catalog and then popularize again and go, check it out? So I'm not sure what the right thing is here.
It's kind of amazing that it actually still works.
Well,
yeah, it really is.
I'm concerned.
That's when you have to say they don't make it like they used to.
Well, the
Martin Mark.
before you say your favorite tagline, this actually is a hilarious thing. If you actually look at the article, if you want to relive some of this history, there's actually a repository where you can go get the game they found on the old Macintosh SE if you really want to rub it in. I mean, never mind.
GitHub?
Nothing. Never mind. I was going to actually talk about the cheap smartphone, actually, which I thought was interesting. The conferences, security conferences coming up in just a couple of weeks in Vegas, who here is bringing their current personal smartphone to the scene, and why wouldn't you want to?
What do you mean? You're not going to go play Pokemon Go at Black Hat USA? And
can you imagine
DEFCON?
All the Pokemon?
That's gonna be a lot of Pokemon.
Pokemon for every time you get hacked. Every time they get some PI off, you get a new legendary, guys. That's how it works.
It's the Wall of Sheepio instead of just the Wall of Sheep. Is it?
Yeah, I'm actually wondering if they're gonna have a Pokemon theme to the Wall of Sheep this year.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you know, the guys behind it are probably like, "This is awesome. Let's do it."
Probably so. Probably so. I'm sure there will be a whirl of Squirtle, and it'll be terrible. And so really, have you ever actually used a, so one of the conversations I've seen, a couple of conversation threads have dealt with the concept of burner devices and not using your personal toys in a public space where it is obvious that everyone there is looking for the, they're looking for someone else's data. It was an SEP. No, this is SED and not said AUK style SED. This is somebody else's data. They're looking for something to occupy their time while they're waiting for the next talk to start at DEF CON, at B-Sides LV, at Black Hat. So would you risk using any of your own personal devices, and how would you protect? What's a good concept for burner devices? Pinky, do you have some good ideas on this one?
I don't think I'd personal. I would probably bring my own personal phone just so I could have it like at the airport and things like that. But the moment, you know you're on the way there, go ahead, put it in airplane mode if you don't turn it off, whatever. You know, do not connect it to Wi-Fi. Do not have your Bluetooth on. Don't be caught with your Apple Watch or any other smart watches there, because you're just asking, you know, for them to figure out how to get that too. And just have a nice burner phone that you pick up from like Walmart and just go on to Straight Talk or one of those, you know. Don't spend tons of money because you're only going to have this phone for a week. And figure out what you want. Do you only need a text? You know, you probably don't want to do too much more than X. Do you really want to be connecting to your personal Facebook on this burner phone on an open network that people are probably listening to and gathering network traffic? Probably not.
Good point. You're not like you're going to be doing work from this device. You shouldn't ever consider connecting a burner device to your personal accounts. So go ahead and use it for basic communication. And then what do? Hit it with a hammer, give it to a pawn shop, get $5 for it. What do you do?
Sell it on Craigslist.
Hit it with a hammer?
Sell it on Craigslist cheap. Malware comes free.
You're great. That's the thing. Hey,
fantastic.
I've got this phone. I only used it a couple days. Turns out I just didn't need it. Yeah, comes with.
Just didn't like it. I've returned it back to Apple. Yeah. that would end bad.
Oh, well, but that's the thing.
I've heard it described that, you know, a lot of the guys, they'll buy one cheap off of, you know, an Android cheap phone off of Craigslist or eBay, slap some Synogen on it, turn off Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and load up Signal and use that only for texting with other people who are there, what have you. Do not add your email. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200 because it won't be in your pocket. It'll be in theirs.
So now we know the rest of the story.
Makes me kind of wonder, though, you know, for fun in games, should one, you know, sign up for joehackme@gmail.com just for a con email, slap it on there, get Joe Hackme Facebook account, Google Plus account, all that, and really monitor the hell out of these accounts and see what they come up with. That sounds like a talk to me.
It really does. I think it'd be great as long as you know what you're getting yourself into. It's one thing going into Black Hat, DEF CON, besides Las Vegas first time, and, you know, not being expecting to get hacked. But if you're going in expecting it, I think it's fair game. It'd be a great talk. So Cooper, come back from all that with the talk, you know, in September about this.
Sounds like a plan. Yeah. So
I think you could do that. You borrow one. You can generate one using
Keybase. I lost my keys. Can I borrow yours?
No, I think actually you're well in position to take care of these things. And not to mention the fact that this gives you another talk that you can work on after this talk. You can actually push for use of this at what? Are you going to Derby this year?
I wish I was, but unlike some people that were lucky enough, I totally missed on getting a ticket again this year. So, yeah, I'll be one of those guys on that has already put up bots trying to get notified as soon as somebody says, I got a DerbyCon ticket. What do you want to give me? I'm so screwed because I can't go. I got to work. Be like, dude, let's have a hacker drug deal. Let me meet you in front of the CVS or behind the McDonald's and I'll give you some cash.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think that's called a hacker drug deal. I think that's just called buying a ticket, but that's okay. I think the other side of that.
Let's respond the other way.
I was going to say a hacker drug deal is more like, okay, how much monster beverage are you giving them? in exchange for this thing. That's several cases of Monster right there. What form is your caffeine coming in? And don't answer that, because instead we're going to move into our attic and, you know, start to shout, get off my lawn. And I'm going to ask Pinky if she can check a dashboard.
Pinky. Survey says, apparently.
I think we've lost her.
Move further down.
Oh, okay. Nope, the connection died. Got it.
Her internet died. Whoops.
Okay.
That explains why she hasn't moved in 5 minutes.
That'll do it. Well, there
instead,
it is.
Well, let's, until she rejoins, let's go ahead and look at the attention-bound U.S. tourists social media text now subject to inspection. Yes, if they're not checking your baggage, they are now checking your Facebook. And this is an ArsTechnica.com article. And it says here, federal government is taking another step it says would make the U.S. homeland safer from terrorism.
Really?
U.S. border authorities are proposing that millions of tourists entering the country each year reveal their social media identities. The proposal from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced last week in the Federal Register would add a line to the online or paper form that U.S.-bound visitors must fill out if they don't have a visa and plan on staying up to 90 days for vacation, business, or other affairs. The agency says travelers coming to the U.S. under the visa waiver program won't be forced to disclose their social media handles, but leaving it blank obviously could raise red flags. Here's what they will be asked. Please enter information associated with your online presence, provider, platform, social media identifier. This field doesn't call for additional information such as passwords, as it's likely to yield many if applicants aren't paying attention and other overshare. It will be an additional data field to request social media identifiers to be used for vetting purposes, as well as applicant contact information. The government said on the Federal Register, collecting social media data will enhance the existing investigative process and provide DHS greater clarity and visibility to possible nefarious activity and connections by providing an additional tool set which analysts and investigators may use to better analyze and investigate the case.
So that's actually really interesting. I'm wondering, Coop, if you think that people will just... this goes back to a talk we saw at B-Sides SATX earlier this year about connecting to public and free Wi-Fi, right? I believe it's a young man from Austin. He's 10, and he did a study on how many people would actually click the I agree option to a set of terms of service or a EULA, you know, end user license agreement, in documentation. And what if you actually did it? And so you just happened to fill it out and people agreed. So they went to a public space and they set up an example. And just to see how many people would actually agree to their terms of service, which said that if you agree to it, you're going to automatically have your data probed and you're going to agree to have them look at your network traffic. And folks actually clicked on it. They agreed. They actually went ahead with it. So I'm not sure if it's going to be something that people are going to pay close enough attention to, because once again, this is another case of us not paying close enough attention, and we're willing to give it away for free if we have it at our fingertips, like on a social media site. If I walked up to you in a public space and said, excuse me, would you like to take a survey? You would tell me to get lost. However, I'm fairly certain that if we let folks go after it, if we just said, oh, what's your favorite character? People would fill it out and they would go. What do you think?
I'm thinking that, you know, and just creating better rainbow tables, you know, especially if you add a, you know, blank line there, it's like, go ahead and fill out your social media. And, you know, if they have an extra blank, oh, I must put in my password. It's 123456. Or it's, you know, password 1. You know, those are the kind of people that you'll get. You know, there are people that put in the same name of the service as their password. So maybe the government doesn't even need them to put that in. They'll just check it anyway using the most common passwords. And
well, would this maybe not catch the people who you're trying to catch? You'll catch everyone else in between.
Who knows? I don't really think if they were coming here to do truly nefarious things, they're going to get on Facebook and check in saying, oh, time to go stash the bomb.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to. I mean, Pinky, do you think people are going to actually do this? Well, I don't know. Personally, I think that there's that we're going to have to see how that plays out. People just aren't going to give it up for nothing. At least I would like to believe they're not going to.
I hope not.
There's no way to actually tell. And I just think there has to yet be some way that where we draw a line as people who are participating and giving our data up. Well, thank you again for listening to us trample through the tulips this week. Please feel free to reach out with your questions or comments, and you're welcome to find us at SATXHackers on Twitter. And maybe next week we might actually talk about more security. Thanks so much.